Welcome to the 22nd Macro and Volatility Podcast. Today is Tuesday, July 1st, 2025. My name is Eric Bender. I am joined by our two experts, Michael Purvis, CEO of Talbot & Capital Advisors, a cross-asset macro research firm, and Josh Silva, CIO of Passaic Partners, a derivative specialist and a manager of institutional advisory assets. Before we dive into today's topic, we ask that if you like what you hear, please subscribe to the Macro and Volatility Podcast on your podcast platform of choice, Bloomberg and LinkedIn. As always, Michael is available to discuss his institutional research offering, and Josh is available to discuss his derivative solutions. All right, let's get into it. There's a lot going on with interest rates, equities, and the dollar. Michael, can you frame that for our listeners?
Yeah, sure, Eric. Look, I think there's a lot of really interesting, what I would call cross-asset contradictions going on right now. So, equity markets, U.S. equities are screaming fresh record highs and also at record high valuations here. But bonds are a different case, and so is the dollar. Bonds are really, they've been bid a little bit here on some of the weaker data here, but generally the term premium and the 10 and 30-year treasuries is really high and really sticky, and that raises a lot of questions for me. And another very related concept is that the dollar has really continued its weakening trend. We'll get into that a little bit later here, but I think this concept of a sticky term premium today speaks to a certain sickness in the back end of the treasury curve, that I think ultimately will have some implications for things like equities. But I'm going to talk really quickly just on some of the interesting things in the currency world. One, which we've seen a big dollar weakening this year, depending on how you measure, 10, 11% weaker. That's a big move here. But what's also, and I think just as important, is that the correlations of the yen with the euro have screamed higher, really at the highest levels they've ever been at, right? So that to me speaks to dollar allergy, if you will. The second thing, Eric, is that the other sort of FX correlation that's really gone extremely other way, meaning from reasonably high correlations to extremely low correlations, is how the dollar pairs are trading with the respective rate differentials. Because normally, if you get higher rates in the U.S. relative to Europe or Japan, that would draw capital into dollar assets, support the dollar. But here you're seeing those correlations break down. So if rates are moving higher in the US, you're not seeing that reflected in currency strength. So two massive correlation distortions, if you will, within the FX world. And both of those, I think, collectively speak to this sort of dollar allergy here. So I think with that said, at 22 times forward earnings on the S&P, you have to sort of wonder whether that kind of valuation is really sustainable if these other two key asset classes have some of these kind of weird things going on with them.
Thanks, Michael. I like the allergy analogy. Josh, what are you seeing from a volatility perspective, and then also the relationship among different asset classes that you kind of pay attention to?
I mean, there's a lot going on right now. I mean, it's been, say, just an interesting year so far, in the second quarter being the most interesting in a while. I mean, since I would call the bunker busting bombing in Iran, we've seen volatility come in quite a bit across all asset classes. Commodity volatility was the one that was the biggest drop of all, as you could say, geopolitical risk comes fast and goes away just as fast. So we've seen a significant drop in oil and gold volatility. Interest rate vol has been tame this entire time. It seemed like people were worried. People were worried about higher rates, possibly 6%. But it seems like the 10-year isn't going anywhere soon. It seems like it's going to be sort of stuck in this 4.75 level, maybe 4.5, which is what the vol market is telling us. I'm not taking that from a macro perspective. It's just incredibly low, and we've seen an incredibly low move in the move index. Equity volatility, which, as I like to say, is represented by the VIX, I think is a place where you need to start thinking about buying. I think sub 17 in the VIX short term is an interesting target, considering all the things that are going on, considering the speed of this move up and down I don't think it's the worst purchase in the world. I wouldn't be aggressively buying in it, but as it goes below 17, I'd start be pulling stuff in and start probably getting more aggressive, maybe at 15 in the VIX. And one of the reasons for that is we continue to see a bid and equity skew as I like to say, the equity or the PE has gone up, or as the bond equity risk premium has gone, as been discussed, as Mike has discussed. We're seeing a lot of put buying or hedging at this point. So equity skew, which I would call the cost of insuring stocks, has gone up a lot, especially over the last 2 weeks. And so that is sort of is telling me that we're going to see sort of a stickier VIX going forward. That being said, you know, we could see a low vol sort of realized vol, but I think the VIX itself is going to be quite sticky because of this downright bid that we're seeing to hedging. The last of the, I'd say, of all the things is the uncertainty is currency. Currency is funny, as Michael pointed out. You know, you're seeing things like the EM currency vols drop quite significantly, almost to like historical low regions. But we're seeing the euro vol hold up while Japan is kind of in a safe place. So you could kind of say that currency vol is still sticky and sort of saying there's still a lot of risk. Especially in the dollar euro, which I think is probably one of the more important currencies. And so, you know, that's something to watch. But keep in mind, this big move that we had on the dollar came on the back at what I call max dollar long. It's not the sort of a correction. It's just we were in like sort of an upper tier sort of long position. And so I think it's something to keep in mind as this currency vol is sort of, especially in the euro, is holding to be a little bit sticky.
Yeah, thank you, Josh. That's a good action item on the 15 VIX, and then as it relates to the FX volatility as well. Michael, what do you think about FX vol as you analyze kind of the broader market?
Well, you know, we went from that sort of giant cross asset vol shock after Liberation Day, you know, when you had these, you know, giant tariffs announced sort of across the board, across every country. But the process of those tariffs has sort of evolved into something that's very nuanced with, you know, extra innings on timing, you know, just sort of added on and added on. And, you know, there's a lot of nuances there. So the process is kind of slow. So there, you should expect some compression in these volatilities. But like Canadian dollar, Josh is right that the euro dollar vol is still really high. But some of the other things you'd think would be higher, like Canadian dollar or the Mexican peso vols, those have come in quite a bit here. And as Josh mentioned, EM vols, you know, China vol, which is always pretty low, just by the nature of the of that currency, is they're just not doing too much here. I just want to add one point to what Josh said about treasury vol, which is that, you know, the other component is that, yes, the back end of the curve is consolidated and that's been sort of vol dampening. But at the same time, the Fed is kind of not doing anything. And that also is vol dampening there. So, you know, let's see if the Fed, you know, starts moving. You know, presumably it's a resumption of the cutting cycle, if anything. But if that is really more of a tweak, then that's not going to be really create a lot more treasury vol. And I do want to make the point that treasury vols and FX vols generally travel together pretty well here. So their journey up and their journey from liberation down, you know, kind of makes a lot of sense and sort of historically fits here. But I think there's another question away from vol exactly about the FX, which I think is important, which is that, look, risk appetite has been just really strong here, not just in the U.S., but really sort of globally. And I guess the question is if the dollar continues to weaken against the euro and the yen and other currencies, is there a tipping point to where that actually is really considered a risk negative? Classically, you know, a weaker dollar, you know, it sort of lightens or eases financial conditions in the U.S. and often will support through a stronger, EM currency basket or Chinese currency in important emerging economies like China, it really does set the table for global risk on, right? I think the question is there a tipping point where the dollar gets so weak that things start really breaking here? And I think there's been a little bit of flirtation with that. those concepts. But clearly right now equities are really bulled off, and the VIX has really been coming down into the mid-teens from the high teens, as Josh was referencing there. I think just one final point is that what I'm going to kind of look for on this sort of dollar allergy story is whether dollar yen correlations stay high and whether those rate differential correlations I was talking about earlier stay super low. If that continues to be the case and the dollar continues to weaken, then I think you're going to increase the chance of getting into sort of a problematic situation for equities.
Thanks,
Yeah, I
Michael.
mean,
So from a primitive standpoint, sorry to interrupt, Josh. I look at this and I say, what are investors missing as it relates to the dollar, the Fed, and equities? Josh, I'll put that to you.
it seems like the easy trade has been this short dollar. And again, we're kind of coming off max dollar long, as I pointed out, which I think is a very, very important concept to understand, where the goal was long US bonds and US equities as much as they've ever have been at the end of the year. And then with policies, it's changed that position and reduced that position a bit. I do question, does this make sense, right? In terms of, like, is this the thing that is the right thing to do? The US currently has the highest interest rates in sort of the developed world, which would make sense to own US bonds, let's say, on a carry trade perspective. And it also has the highest potential for growth, with AI basically being all over here. So you could say the bond market and the equity market, from a rate return or from a growth return, are the best investments to make is in the US. And I wonder if we're going to look back and wonder why we de-dollared at all. Was it just a moment in time, or was it something that really truly made sense? And some of the things that Michael has pointed out in the past, the papers and such, I think are important to think about. And so I look at this, and again, it hasn't paid to bet against the US in a very, very long time. And so I think this move to the dollar was made sense because it came off these really long positions. And I think it's important to think about what that looks like. And I also come back to the fiscal conservative means, it tells me that the debt market is something to respect and be fearful under. We talked about that last time, and the amount of debt is just too big for my taste. I also think a very interesting point is people are undermissing Jay Powell and sort of what he can do. I think that there's a better chance than what people think that the Fed is going to ease rates in July. I would put it more at 50-50 versus 20. Reason being, I think if the market is here because people think Trump's tariff policy is going to be less than what they expect, which is pretty dovish in terms of tariffs now, I think it's going to give room for Paul to ease, because one of the things that's holding him back is fear of inflation produced by tariffs. If he has a view that that's going to go away, it gives him the ability to ease. And so I think people's views on the ability of the Fed to ease rates is a little bit too hawkish, quite frankly. Well, that being said, I mean, we are as overbought as we've been in a long time in equities. And so I could see a short-term pullback. Specifically, you could see some of the stuff that's been really racing higher, some of the growthiest, the Nasdaq stuff pull back. But even in this higher PE environment, equities tend to be the simple path is higher. I'm still looking for a catalyst to get us lower, but I'm not seeing anything. And we just threw the kitchen sink at the markets, and that markets are at all-time highs. I do think there's a chance for an IWM chase at this point, just to catch up. That's kind of it.
Yeah, I want to just, Eric, pick up on one point Josh mentioned about sort of effectively sovereign credit, right? And I think it's important because you saw some yen weakness back in May and June. It's not clear whether that's just it was a temporary thing or whether it's really a pivot to more serious yen weakness. But what is, I think, important to remind ourselves is that the only major developed economy that has a good fiscal condition is Europe right now. Now, fiscal conservatism has never been a factor in FX, DMFX trading over the last several years, right? It just hasn't been. But arguably, there's a theme here where Japan, which has too much sovereign leverage, the United States, particularly after this just looks like it just passed tax bill, again, heading towards even higher sovereign leverage. Well, Europe is the only fiscally solid game in town. And if that becomes a very dear attribute to how FX are going to trade. Well, it hasn't been in the past, but if it starts coming into the limelight as a key factor, then I think you could expect the euro to go substantially higher than where we are right now, because it's the only
house on the block for that.
Right. So that could mean 125, 130, and so forth. And again, that will be raise all sorts of interesting questions, you know, for equities around the world.
I hear you. I still slightly disagree, because I still think the euro is the grand experiment. We'll see what ends up happening on the back end of that. But from a fiscal standpoint, I'm totally on board. I just don't know if the Europeans have the ability to pull it off.
Well, that's good. We got a couple takeaways in that final segment, and some good answers. So we really appreciate that. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Josh. I learned a lot. You can find both of them on Bloomberg, LinkedIn, and their respective websites, www.talbachandcapital.com and PassaicPartners.com. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, we'll keep an eye on what matters in the markets.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice. The information, opinions, and views expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice. The opinions expressed may not align with Passaic Partners' views or its client strategies. Market forecasts are speculative and should not be the sole basis for investment decisions. Consult your financial and tax advisors before making any investments.